Accession number 31439, Mr. Tom Latham, Real One. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Latham?
I was born on the 24th of July, 1932, at Spring Pond Road in Dagenham, Essex.
Now, could you tell us a bit about your family background? Did the family come from Dagenham?
My father was a postman, and he worked at Mount Pleasant in London. When they built the Dagenham estate, that was for the overflow of Dagenham from London, and they all come to Dagenham. And my parents moved into number 4, Spring Pond, and that's where I was born. And then the family got big, and we moved across to number 35, because it was a big house on the corner. My dad was in the Great War.
Tell us about that. Much about him?
Yeah, my dad was in the Great War. It had him down as in the catering, and he was in the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, and he got blasted with a shell, and he lost his right arm. He got on discharge. He had various jobs, but then he finished up. One of his jobs was a night watchman at Dagenham, and a place called the Fiddlers. There was a pub there, and I remember he telling me this story. He used to make a dummy and put it in the hut in them days, so he used to have a coat brazier outside, and he used to go in the pub, have some drinks, and one night the foreman come along and found out it was empty, and he got the sack. He then applied for the post office at Mount Pleasant, and his job, believe it or not, with his one arm, was in those days the parcels were brown paper and string, and they used to get damaged, and his job was to tie them up. He was a fantastic man. His fingers were the size of sausages. His arm was big. We had allotment, but getting back to his job, if that was his job, he could do shoelaces, and he could put his own tie on, and he loved a pint.
Now, had his experiences in the Great War affected him in any way? I mean, other than the obvious. I mean, was he mentally scarred by it or upset by it?
No, he never talked about it. We don't know a lot about it. I found out more about it by going to the database at Kew. I've got his Army War record, his discharge papers, rather. Got some old photographs of him in the war. But I don't know what upset him, but he would never wear a poppy. And I don't know why. That'd be some reason. I don't even know if he got a pension. Because when I went up the database, if they got a pension, it was easier to find them. But they told me that a lot of records were lost during the war, up north, because it was all on paper then, and the building got bombed and all got destroyed. So I don't really know how far I can find out about him on that.
Now, how many were there in the family? You said the family got large.
Yes,
how large?
There was 9 of us. There were 6 boys and 3 girls. There is now 3 boys and 1 girl. Yes.
Now, what do you remember about your childhood in Dagenham?
Well,
before the war. I mean, yes, first 7 years.
It was rough, like all the estate was. My mother didn't work, and it was just my dad's income, which could have been great being a postman. But I think we were well looked after. I think we really were. She really looked after us. Then the war broke out, and we got evacuated. We got took down to Dagenham Dock, and we got put on a ferry. I'm just trying to explain it. The paddle steamer called the Daffodil, at Dagenham Dock, and we got took to Yarmouth, and we was evacuated in a house there. I don't quite know where, because I could only been about 7, I suppose, then. And we stopped there. We was there for 3 nights, and my mum come home with my younger brother. I was second from youngest. He was a baby then, and she brought him home. And me and the brother 2 above me, called Charlie, we stopped there for quite a few months. And we
so got that was from home. September 39.
That could have been that time, yes.
And until when? Before or after Christmas?
That I'm not sure. I can't really recollect the dates.
And I know you were very young, and not many people remember that, but do you have any impressions of what your time was like in Yarmouth and how you got on with the people you were staying with?
Yes, I can remember stopping there, and the thing that intrigued me most was if you were dying to go to the house we stopped in, the toilet was off the kitchen. And if you got took short, you couldn't go. If she was cooking, you used to have to go next door if it was available, because obviously the smell, it just wasn't on. I can remember there was an aerodrome near us. I mean, but I still don't know where I was evacuated in Norfolk. But there was an aerodrome there, and we used to go down there, and apparently a jeep used to ride out on the grass to see if it was too soft for the airplanes to take off and the rest of it.
So it wasn't necessarily Yarmouth you were actually staying in? No, it was Norfolk.
It was in Norfolk, yes.
And were they kind to you?
Oh, yes, no problem. No problem at all. You know, we treated well. You know, I can't remember much about that. It's the other evacuation I can remember more about.
Well, did your school go with you? I mean, were you educated
no,
still?
No, not that one wasn't the school, no.
Now, so you came back,
yes,
still in 39 or 40, you don't know. It's fair.
I'll explain how it went then. I don't know the dates when we come back, but I do know the dates that we went, because the three of us went, myself, Ronnie and Charlie. Charlie was the eldest, and he was born in 1927, and he was still at school at 13, so it must be 1940 when we got evacuated to a little place called Inkpen in Berkshire. And we went by the school, went from the school all by coach, and we pulled up at the village hall, and we was all put in there, and the villagers came in, and I left them, and I left them, and I left them, and it finished up with us three brothers just sitting there, and they were wanted three boys, I suppose. And then this lady came in called Mrs. Tuttle, and she came in, and we were the only ones there, and she says, "Where they all gone?" So they said, "They've all gone." She said, "Oh." And they said, "We've got these three boys that mustn't be separated." So she said, "I'll take them." And I can remember every single detail of that evacuation.
Well, tell us, I mean, what was the house like?
Right. She took us down. We had to walk from the village church. She said she'd have us. And we walked down to this cottage. And it was a thatched cottage. And it had no amenities whatsoever. As you went in the back door, there was a door on the side where the toilet was a bucket over under a wooden frame. It had a log fire, which is cooker meals on. And the kitchen was a huge butler sink that we could sit in to be washed, to bathe, because there was no bathroom. They had a dining room downstairs, the staircase went upstairs, and there were three bedrooms upstairs. She had her brother living with her, who was a thatcher, and her husband worked on the farm that belonged to, so I was told, to Lady Astor. That was about a mile and a half or so from Inkpen. It was a big house, and he worked on the farm there. Chickens, they had chickens and pigs on the farm. They had about an acre, or could it be more, no, about five acres of land out the back, something like that. And the chickens used to come in the house, do whoopsies, and she used to just get a bit of paper and wipe it up and throw it on the fire. And it was a raw thatched cottage. The pump over the big, huge butler sink, you used to have to pour water down, a jug of water down, it started first thing in the morning, and you'd pump it, and all the bugs and everything would come out of it, and she'd pump and pump and pump, and she'd get a bucket, and she'd put a mutton cloth over it, and she'd pump it, like that, and that bucket went down with a wooden lid over it, that was your drinking water. But for all the other water, it was just normal. You know? And you used to have to dip your cup out of the kettle of that, that was your drinking water. She used to cook over this stove, and she could cook. Coming to schooling, she took us to the school, we had to walk through the woods.
Now, did your whole school go to the same school more this there was, morning, afternoon, or how did they
There was quite a few, because briefly, when I come back after evacuation, there was three boys in my class, so there was at least four of us together, right, in this bus time. We used to walk through the woods, I don't know how far it was, I've done it, so, and the village school, it was a boys and girls school. You had lessons together, but you were separated outside. The toilets were once again with buckets outside, and they used to have a metal fence to keep separate the children. The lessons were good. It was one main class that had curtaining, two sets of curtaining come down to make it into three classes. I learnt to do what they call real writing. And we learned songs that I still know now, and poem sort of thing.
What do you mean by real writing? Do you mean joined
up? Joined up. And, you know, and when I come back to Dagenham, I wasn't allowed to do it because the school didn't do it. So we learnt that there. No problems at school at all.
How did you get on with the other kids? Because sometimes there was a bit of friction between...
There was no friction whatsoever. There was me and the brother above me went to this school, but Charlie, the eldest one, he went to Hungerford. He had to pick up a coach. And I'll start with him now. He went there, but he was only there for a few months, and he left school. Now, his birthday was in February, so he could have left at the season, which could have been Easter, could have been April, something like that. And he started work with Bert. In the village, the couple we stopped with was known as Aunt Nell and Uncle Dick. And her brother was Bert, and he lived there, and he was a thatcher. And my brother started working with him as a thatcher. We used to have to go to Sunday school at the Inkpen Church on Sunday afternoons. Every Sunday we had to go. But in the village itself at Inkpen, just opposite our house, was a little village hall, church hall, and we used to have to go in on Wednesday night. And my brother, Charlie, used to play the organ at that age, you know.
But you say you got on well with local kids.
There was no problem with the locals, none whatsoever, because the chap next door, Tommy Wright, we went back there. I'll interrupt that story. We went back there. I took my wife back there in 1961, and we phoned him up, and he come down, but that's a different story. The field at the back of us, in those days, of course, of the land, they grew potatoes one year, and we all had to go in because it was all picked up by hand, and it's all stacked up, and they used to cover them with straw and soil and stick a tuft of straw out the top to let the air go in so they wouldn't go rotten. And the second year, that we was there for about 18 months, but we got two harvests. And the second harvest was wheat, and it was all done by hand. They had the scythes. And we used to have to go stack them up and tie them into little bundles. And all the village used to be there, all around the field, catching the rabbits. And there was rabbits galore.
And who did this field belong to?
It was part of Stockbridge. This cottage was called Stockbridge Cottage in Inkpen, and it was part of their land. Yes. No amenities, I said. We used to have to go to bed with an oil lamp. They had two oil lamps in the lounge, and we used to have to go up with a little one. We used to come down, and it'd be a jug of hot water to wash. It was all boiled. There was no amenities whatsoever. As I said, that the pigs and chickens used to have.
How did you get on with? I mean, I know Dagenham wasn't as towny as it is now, if you see what I mean. But how did you get on with all the ruralness? I mean, was it something new to you, or what did you think of it?
Well, what do I think? I thought it was so fantastic that when my parents come down the first Christmas we were there to visit us, and she put them up. But when it came that my dad and my eldest brother came down, it could have been about September, October, which could have been then 1941, I should imagine, to take us home. I cried my eyes out. And I can still remember so much about it, going to catching a bus, going to Newbury, which was a treat. The house not far from us got a bomb on it. It got bombed. And the woman put a sign outside, something like 1 and 6 pence to come and look at the bomb damage. Remember that? We went to the local doctor, and his name was Schlesinger. Right? And his brother used to be on the television at Schlesinger. And his housekeeper, Aunt Nell, knew her, and the postman used to drop her off to come to Mills in the post van. You know, and we used to go down there and see slideshows and films, you know, things like that. And Aunt Nell used to ride around on a bike with a seat on the back, and I used to be sitting on it, ride down the village, you know, to the shop. We had a village shop there that she used to moan like hell, because the old boy in there had the shakes, and he never had a slicer, and he used to have to cut the bacon by hand. So the rashes were thick and thin, and I used to go in there with her at times, and she used to moan at him, cut it straight, and he couldn't because of the all various things like that. We used to have to go out and collect firewood because it was from the woods. Weekends, Uncle Dick used to take us down the woods and bundle up firewood. We had a barrow because that's all there was, a log fire. Next door was a little bungalow named Wright's, but they had mains water. You know, they were lucky.
So you really enjoyed it.
It was fantastic.
Was there much bombing? I mean, that sounds like an occasional bomb.
There was nothing.
Yeah,
nothing.
Did you have air raid shelters and things at Inkpen or not?
Yes, they built an air raid shelter, and the first drop of rain it filled up.
Was that a what type of shelter was it?
They got a boss name, the corrugated iron ones.
Anderson.
Yes, they got issued with that, and we had to help Uncle Dick they found the footage for it. Like,
do you remember how you, because people don't know now. I mean, I know you can still see them in some back gardens, yes. But can you describe that Anderson, how you put it in?
Right, you dug a hole, right, and it, say, for example, maybe 5 foot deep, right, and you had steps going down it. And then it was in oval shapes, and the two shapes joined together at the top, and they were bolted, and the back went straight with the escape hatch. You used to put light soil at the back, and if your front got blocked, two clips used to, and that used to fall in for you to get out. And they used to be available with four bunks, used to be able to fit in there. But of course, that one filled up with water.
I mean, did you pump it out, or was that just the end of it?
We never even went down it.
Anything else? What about rationing, food rationing? Did that make much impact in Inkpen, being a country area?
I wouldn't know. No, not at that age. But, you know, we were fed well, because we used to get rabbits, we used to get pheasants working on that estate, and rabbits galore. You know, you had chickens and plenty of eggs, so no, I can't visualise that side of it.
Now, tell me, what you went back in October 41.
We come home.
Yeah. Back. How did you feel about it? Obviously, you felt bad. But I mean, also, you're going to see your parents again.
That just changed completely. Since you're with school friends, where you were, they're sort of forgotten. No, just got back to normal. It was just back to normal again, you know.
Now, what was life like? Because the bombing hadn't really stopped in 41. Why had you gone back?
I don't really know. No, I think my mum could have missed us or what, I don't know.
You're only nine, so...
Yeah, so he just brought us back, like...
So tell me about the effects of German air raids in London, then.
It didn't affect us a lot in such respect that we had some bombings, because the house at the back of our house was allotments, which is now built on, and my dad had an allotment there. But the house right at the back of that was bombed, had a bomb on it. The airplanes used to come over with sirens and all the rest of it, you know, loads of them. We had Anson shelter, and we used to be down there a lot.
What was it like in the Anderson? Because you never got in the other one, but what was it like in the Anderson shelter?
They were cosy, you know. Well, being kids, once again, they wake you up, there's air raid, you go down, as soon as you got in, you fell asleep again. But they were cosy. You could make them as cosy as you could, you know.
So how would you make it cosy?
Well, blankets. You know, the bunks were wired. I believe they were wired. And Mum used to put a blanket at the bottom, and you have a blanket on the top. But as kids used to rough it. You know, you'd dag them, you didn't know no different. It was all rough. You know?
Was it scary in there when there was an actual raid? I mean,
no,
as a kid?
No, I don't think so, no. Because we had they called it a shell cap, come through the roof of our house, over the bathroom. It hit the bath, which was the enamel bath in them days, or an iron bath, you know. And it ricocheted three times in the bath, right, before it settled down. So we had a hole in the ceiling, and we had three chips in the bath.
Now, is that a shell cap? Sounds like it was anti-aircraft fire.
Yes.
Not.
Yes.
And was that quite common damage from bits of anti-aircraft shell?
I should imagine so. Especially, you know, I would say in London or places like that. Because over the park near us, the sirens were going, and then Mum shouted out, "Come on, quick, get up." So we've got out, and we're going down the stairs. We got down the bottom of the stairs, and there was terrific noise. It was unbelievable, the noise. And my mum flung us on the floor, and she jumped on top of us, laid on us, and said, "The noise, it was unbelievable." What it was then in them days, that the Parslow's Park had them rockets. They had rockets, guns. And that's the first time they'd gone off. And they shot up, and it was like fireworks, because they exploded when they got up. It's unbelievable. And that was frightening, the noise of them. Then once you knew they was over there, it was, you know, expected. We had a incendiary bomb fall right down the chimney into the fireplace.
Did it go off?
Yes, it lit up. We was a corner house, and corner houses had sandbags and buckets of sand and buckets of water with fire on them. And my dad went out there, and it was lying there, and he put a sandbag on it and buckets of water, and we put it out. But we lost all our ceilings, because they was lath and plaster, the ceilings. So all the ceilings come down in the house with the vibration. The bedroom ceilings all come down. And
any other close escapes or, you know, things you remember?
No, the nearest, but then coming towards the end of the war, then the doodlebugs used to come over. But
that's the V1s?
That's the V1s, yes. And we used to see them. They'd the hell of a noise, and they'd just cut out, and they'd fall. But then the rockets came over, the V2s, and we had one that dropped in a place called Osborne Square. And we went as kids round, because it dropped during the night, and before we went to school, we went down there and see it. And my chap I know, the boy I know then, just had an old great coat on, army, like a, his dad's overcoat, and it fell in a square, and it had just devastated. The whole lot had gone over. There were terrible things over there, really.
Did you ever play on bomb? A lot of London, well, I'm not sure whether Dagenham is London, but a lot of London kids used to play on bomb sites and things and collect bits of shrapnel and all the rest of it. Did you do any of that, or were you too young?
No, we did, not so much on the bomb sites, but Parzo's Park had 3 bombs dropped on it, and we used to go there, just the craters, and hunt around for them and collect bits and pieces, you know, but no, not actually on bomb sites. First I can remember, they was roped off, like, you know.
Tell me about getting towards the end of the war. Do you remember any V-Day or VJ-Day street parties?
Yes, we had a street party. I'll tell you one little thing before we go about about the school. But we'd been back. Yes, we'd come back from. So I was in the juniors then, and it was getting, the raids were getting bad over London. Not so bad our way, because it was weren't all that bad. Like, you know, the Ford Motor Factory got bombed a few times, so I was told. But they shut the school down. And we used to have to, we was allocated houses to go to. And there'd be 4 of us or 5 of us go to a house for a couple of hours. And that lasted quite a few months, so that if the school was to get hit, you know, the children weren't sort of in it.
And how did that work? Was there a teacher in the house? I mean, would 4 or 5 of you
go and the teacher would turn up. You'd go, she'd do a morning, she'd go visit various houses, like, in the course of a day.
And so... anything else before we go on to the street parties?
No, I don't think so. Not,
well, tell me about the street parties. Because people don't really have them now, or if they do, they don't seem to work the same way. What do you remember of the street party?
Well, we was in bed, actually. And our mum come up and says, there's a fire down the... We lived in the sort of turning. She said, there's a...
Excuse me,
there's a coffee. Right. So we've said there's a fire. So we've come downstairs... And out in the road, the kids were dancing around it. They built a fire, right? Because it had been announced that the war was over.
So this is VE Day.
This is VE, right? And then it was about, I'm just going to guess, because I don't know, but it could have been, we'd say, a week later, where they organised a street party. And we had a Punch and Judy and, you know, soft drinks. And it couldn't have been a lot, because it was still rattling. But we did have a street party. But that's about all it was like, you know.
And were they good? I mean, was it a good party? I mean, as a kid? I mean, and were adults drinking and, you know, were they having their own
everyone party? Everyone was out there, yes. But, as I say, it was just a... We rationed. There wasn't a lot of food and the rest of it. Jellies, I suppose, and stuff like that, you know, for kids' stuff. But
Now, how was your education going? Because it's a bit disrupted, this. I mean, you've been evacuated to Norfolk, you've been evacuated to Inkpen. But I know you had a good school there. You've had the school closed, and although you were being evacuated in homes, it's not exactly a full day's schooling. No. What impact did it have on your education, do you think?
I was a dunce. No, I wasn't clever at anything. And that's the truth. I just wasn't clever. I enjoyed school, you know. I'd done my lessons, but I never got a good report. I got good reports on punctuality and things like that, but the school remarks weren't at all brilliant. Not at all.
So what happened at school after the war? I mean, what did you do? Did you just go to 14 or what?
Yes, just went to 14. Nothing, you know, unusual. Nothing.
Any subjects you liked? I mean, or disliked? You know,
history and archaeology now is one of my favourites. But I loved history. I love castles and visiting. All that is of interest to me. I really, really like it.
Anything you didn't like at school?
Arithmetic, I reckon.
And what about sport? In personal interest, tell me outside of school or at school, sport. Was sport important to you at all? Or did you
no, full stop. I'm just not a sport person. Not at all.
And did you have any big hobbies as a child?
As a child, yes, cycling. We belonged to a cycling club. And we used to stop in the Youth Hostel Association when we were kids, and I cycled nearly all over southern England. We used to stop. We couldn't go to the furthest we went up was Stratford upon Avon in the Midlands. But other than that, we used to stop in Youth Hostel because we couldn't go too far because it was still rationing and the rest of it. But it was.
And what kind of bike did you have? Did you have a sort of sports bike?
Oh, yes, I had a proper bike. I finished up with a Rayleigh. Or Riley, whatever they called them. Yes, I had a proper bike, which my mum managed to buy. Don't know how, but she did.
So that was your main outside interest?
Was cycling. Yeah, so I wasn't... Football, cricket, no. I'm not a sports person.
No, after... So when you left school, you'd leave when you were 14 then?
Yes.
So that's, what, 46?
Yes.
So what were you going to do? Who decided what you were going to do?
My headmaster. Right. He was all assembled in hall, and he came in one day and he said, who hasn't got jobs? And there was two of us. So we put our hands up. He said, right, I'm sending you for an interview at a garage in Upminster. Right? Because he lived in Upminster. And me and this other chap went to Upminster. My brother above me had already left school. He was 2 years older. And he started at a garage called Reynolds at Dagenham. At Dagenham Motors, an apprentice. I went for this interview at this garage, which is still in Upminster. And there was three sort of directors there of this garage. And one of them said to me, after I spoke to him, he said, have you got a brother that works at Reynolds Motors? So I said, yes. Well, that apparently got me the job. Because a couple of days later, the headmaster called me in his study and said, you start at... It was called Vassal Motors in Upminster.
Now, what were you doing? Were you an apprentice, a proper apprentice, or were you just What were you then?
I left school on the Friday, and in the days you started work on a Monday. They paid my fare. They gave me a three-monthly ticket from Heathway, which was Dagenham, to Upminster. I used to walk down Corbett's Tow Road to the garage. My very first job there, as a boy, was repairing a puncture. And they showed the tie levers in them days, and you have to tread on it there. And I was at a lab with me about 18 then, and he showed me how to repair the puncture, which I did. And we put it back in it, and I trod the wheel on and pumped it up, but I caught the inner tube, and there was another puncture. So that was my first thing. And the second job was washing the car. I had a pellet filling station outside, and the old boy that used to serve the petrol, there wasn't a big demand in them days, and he used to have to wash and polish the cars. And then my second job was helping him polish cars. I was there for just about a year. Yes. Just
46 to 47 sort of thing.
Yes. And I left there, I think it was in September. Nothing is signed out of there. It was a daily chore. But the winter of 46 into 47, it was one of the worst on record. It was absolutely freezing. That garage was freezing. I then got a job in 47 in a foundry called Stirling Works at Dagenham. The foundry was Russell Newbury's.
Iron foundry?
Yes, and they made diesel engines for boats and generators and things like that. And my brother-in-law worked there, and I said they wanted a boy, and I got a job there as an apprentice, as a core maker. C-O-R-E, core maker, because it's all sand, you see. And then I become a moulder and a jobbing moulder. And
so which you did core making?
Core
first,
making to start off with,
and then was part. Then were you apprentice moulder? I mean,
yes, I went.
What was the finishing job? If you see what I mean, is core making just on the way to becoming a moulder?
Yes, you know. Do you know what a core is?
No, I think I think that would be helpful for people.
Right. Imagine a cup. Right. If you want to make a cup, you've got to have something inside. Right. Well, that's the core, and it leaves a gap of, we say, 5 centimetres, 5 millimetres round the outside for the metal to go in. So that's the core. The core is something inside everything, right? Like an apple, right? And the outside, but I finished up as a jobbing moulder, which was they'd give you a thing, an object, and you used to have to press it into the sand and make a mould out of it. A plate moulder is where the things are put on a plate, top and bottom, and you put a box underneath, fill it with sand, and press it in. A jobbing moulder is, they give you a thing, and you would have to make it. Press it in the sand and make it yourself. I've worked there till I was 18.
Now, did you enjoy that? I mean, what was the daily routine like in a factory? Because it's all changed, you know.
Dirty, very, very dirty. It's all sand, right? Every other day, they'd cast it. They had a blast furnace there. And my brother-in-law was on the, what they call the furnace man, I suppose. And they said to melt the metal, and you had a funnel coming down, right, with a plug hole. And they used to, when they were ready to do the casting, they used to unplug it, and the metal used to run down this channel into a ladle, and they used to block it up, and you'd take the ladle, and you'd pour it in the cup into the mould. And that was it. And that used to happen every other day with the moulding, like, you know. But it's a very dirty job. I liked it. I liked the planes.
Was it heavily unionised at the time or not?
Well, not when I was there. No. No, not before the war, no. Sorry. No,
I know what you mean, before the Korean War, yeah.
Before I...
Was it seen as a career? I mean, was that what you were going to do?
Yes, I would have stopped there.
And did you have to go to night classes as well? So it was just on-the-job training?
Yes.